morning, honorable members and honorable minister and the delegation from the Department of Health and Technology. You are welcome here in this session. And thank you very much for coming. We will be interacting on the annual report, but also the minister will be briefing us about the desk. Without wasting time, very, very welcome, honorable minister, in our small haven here. Although we seem to be knowing one another, I'm not sure. I think just as a formality, we may want to introduce one another. I'll introduce my committee to you, and subsequently you can introduce yourselves to us from the side of the department. Myself, I'm the chairperson of the committee in Ngabangobo. I've got the secretary Shanaz there. And then I've got the researcher there, Renee, that side. So far these are the members of the staff that I have with me here today, this morning. I'll allow my committee members to also introduce themselves so that you can also feel their voices.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, everyone. Morning, Minister. I'm Ellen Line. I'm from the Northern Cape, and I'm a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Dumela mbagaitso. Ke Popi Mutshumi, leloko la committee ya bonetetsi le kakaretso. Ke tswa ko province ya Gauteng, ko regioneng ya Tshwane. Ke a leboga.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, everyone else. I'm Marion Shin from the Democratic Alliance.
Morning, Peter Smith, member of the committee.
I'm Bongani Msanga from PMG.
The researchers, I've introduced the researcher. I think DG, we can introduce our delegation.
Well, I'm Joacha, the Director General in the Department of Science and Technology.
Imran Patel, Acting DDG Socioeconomic Partnerships.
My name is Chulana Mavuso. I'm from the department.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. I'm Thomas Ochterheider, DDG for International Cooperation.
Good morning. It's Val Mutami, DDG for Research, Development and Innovation.
Morning, Honorable Members. I'm Petiwa Matutu, Chief Director for Human Capital and Science Platform from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning. My name is Godfrey Mashamba, Chief Director, Science Technology Investment at the DST. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Zongo Iselo Mugwena. I'm DDG Corporate Services at the DST.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Malokholwane Malapane. I'm CFO DST. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Muchinyalo Ratombo from Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning. My name is David Makola from Planning, Governance, and Monitoring Evaluation at DST.
Good morning. I'm Nurune Samula. I'm the Director in the Deputy Minister's Office at the DST.
Nasima Boucher, an advisor to the Minister.
Thank you very much. I will take the opportunity to introduce the Minister. Because nobody, we can't alienate her. She's part of us. Okay. Thank you very much. I think without wasting time, we'll give the opportunity to the minister to preface. We long awaited to hear about this.
Yes.
Thank you
very much, Chairperson, and thank you to all honourable members and the officials from the department. Well, the reason I am here today, and it's a coincidence that everybody from the department is here, I'm here to make a presentation on our response to the Astronomy Desk report. The officials are here to present the annual report of the department, and we just happen to meet here. I was quite surprised to see so many of them. I thought just be a few of us here, but a happy coincidence because they'll answer all the questions. Allow me to immediately go into the presentation and to thank the committee for giving us an opportunity to come and brief you today. I will try not to take too long, and of course we'll have a discussion after my presentation, and then we'll go to the annual report of the DST. I thought, Chairperson, we'd just really give an overview in terms of five subheadings to the report. The first is to briefly refer to the historical background of South Africa's activities in the astronomy sciences arena, and then to briefly look at the current context, and then come directly to the report and its contents. We did circulate copies to all members. One of my officials told me members sometimes forget documents, and so they brought copies, and I told them off because they're wasting paper and destroying trees. But anyway, they told me this needs to be done. We'll then come to the recommendations and conclusions. And as I said, we hopefully won't take too long and have more time for discussion. In terms, then, of the historical background, all colleagues would be aware we do have a long history in astronomy. Recently, when I was at a conference of journalists and other media practitioners on science, I was asked, why is South Africa bidding against Australia? Australia has a long history in astronomy, and we don't have a long one. Well, I told them we do have a history. Doesn't matter whether it's long or short, you have one anyway, and we have competence. I think if one looks at recent publications on South Africa's international peer-reviewed articles in various journals, the growth of partnership publication in astronomy indicates that South Africa has astronomy as one of the jewels in its crown of science and technology activities. So clearly, we have an international and growing presence in this area. We begin then in 1897 with the McLean Telescope. The South African Astronomical Observatory Telescope, which is an optical one, first built in 1897. We then, as you know, have the Hart of Yeswerk, a deep space instrumentation facility, 1961, and those lovely gentlemen and a few ladies there. Then HISS in Namibia, the High Energy Stereoscopic System Telescope, a very, very successful gamma-ray telescope built in Namibia with partnership and support from South Africa and other partners. We are anticipating a significant event in August 2012, which will allow us to see this instrument become operational, and I hope that some of us would be able to be at that launch, Chairperson. And then, of course, colleagues are familiar with SALT 2005, a very important international science infrastructure instruments are located in South Africa. These are the aerial images of SALT with a number of telescopes that are instruments that have been placed by various international partners. You'd know there's a great deal of interest due to the low seismic activity in that area. So various countries have both placed telescopes as well as seismic activity monitoring research instruments at the
salt site in Sutherland. And I hope with respect to salt that colleagues would have noted the recent article on some of the economic impact. Sutherland is a town of 4,000 residents, but they receive 10,000 visitors related particularly to the telescope. Interesting, I think, a statistic there. So we believe that astronomy in South Africa has ushered in a new area and that the achievements we've noted have created the possibility for both our country and generally the continent to pursue the development of new opportunities in astronomy, with more particularly a focus on multi-wavelength observatory systems. This possibility, we think, is strongly supported by a geographic advantage of a history of leading astronomy research, the natural attribute of quiet and clear skies, low radio interference, and we think an ideal climate and altitude. It's nice to work in South Africa with wonderful climate, lovely beaches, etc. World-class industries and expertise, as well as the enabling legislation of the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act. Colleagues have seen that our scientists have been able to illustrate that they're able to innovate at the highest levels, both of design and technology, and of course you'll know in terms of our data processing capabilities, we've really shown that we can be part of the leading edge in the world. The current tests that are being done on the CAT-7 illustrate, again, very good capabilities in the country, and of course the work which we will soon be putting out public tenders for around the building of the additional dishes to have the full meerkat by 2016. This is an artist's impression of what the full construction of the meerkat will give rise to. We use this picture worldwide, and it excites a great deal of enthusiasm. You know, to just the background looks fantastic, and you know, the whole desert atmosphere, the lovely cacti, and then, you know, these satellite, these antennae just look amazing. And of course, we're talking about global infrastructure with an African base. We have the partner countries to South Africa and the Africa SKA bid. You know who the partner countries are, and we're very excited that Madagascar is beginning to settle its political problems. It's made our bid document submissions much easier and has helped a great deal, I think, in getting the African position to be accepted and understood. As we look at the future, Chair, the VLBI becomes important, and if you're going to have a large baseline interferometry system, you must have Africa with high-class astronomy infrastructure. We then become linked to the world. This is a very interesting picture when you put it beside what has begun to develop with respect to the undersea cable infrastructure that Africa is building for broadband access. So the astronomy ties, developments tie very well into what is beginning to be done with respect to broadband infrastructure, wireless connectivity on the continent. So it's important, we think, and I think scientists all over the world agree, that Africa can't be left out of global astronomy infrastructure. And so what we're doing in Africa, and particularly our plans with respect to VLBI, will allow us to fit into the rest of the world in terms of this area of scientific and research activity. So we felt that given our attraction of senior astronomers to our universities, to our facilities in the last decade, the interest of young people in this area of activity, that we needed to be more serious about looking at what we need to do. We've had a strong human capital development intervention, both through the Square Kilometre Array Project Office, but also through our National Astrophysics and Space Science Program, about which I might say a little bit more later. We briefed you, Chairperson and committee members, on steps that we were going to take to determine a new framework for the development and management of astronomy in South Africa in August last year. So today we're just really looking at what we're beginning to call the Helberg report. I don't like this astronomy desk report as though it comes from a desk. It's actually a process led by Professor Helberg and colleagues that supported him in the process, and we're going to be tabling for the first time our responses to the report's recommendations. We established the Astronomy Desk just over a year ago, October last year. It was headed by Professor Manfred Helberg, who I think must be congratulated even by committee members for having done an outstanding job, and I'd welcome members actually conveying that to him after reading the report. He's been excellent, always briefing us and really, I think, giving us access to the possibilities that exist in astronomy sciences for South Africa to exploit. And I think brought to the fore opportunities that we may not have always given attention to, but given his being a practitioner, he was able to, you know, give us access to a wealth of information. And the team that supported him, of senior scientists, Professor Ellis and others, really played, I thought, a very, very important role. And we have conveyed our thanks to them, but I wish you would as well. The brief they were given was to advise me on substantive policy and strategic matters relevant to the development of astronomy and related sciences, as well as matters related to our important bid to host the SKA radio telescope. And then these were some of the detailed matters. How can South Africa obtain maximum advantage and return on its investment in astronomy? I spoke recently to a financial advisor, and he told me, Minister Pandor, never allow dogs to sleep. They must bark. So this is what we were asking for. How do we get return on our investment? The appropriate optimal relationship between our research facilities and internationally funded projects. How do we ensure that as we have SALT as an internationally funded project and eventually SKA if we get it, how do we ensure that our national facilities and these instruments, relate to each other in a way that we as the DST feel gives us best outcomes. And then the appropriate structural, organizational, and management relationship between optical and radio astronomy, and, of course, the HES, which measures gamma rays in Namibia. There should be some form of affinity between all of these instruments, both in structural as well as governance mechanisms, so that you don't have a discontinuity which makes life uncomfortable for us as a government department. And of course we need to ensure that the governance model for astronomy facilities is coherent and coordinated. And then of course the whole matter of which site is most suitable for placement of the Meerkat Operations Center, and to advise us on any strategic or urgent matters that might impact on our bid to host SKA. The reason we asked about the Meerkat Operations Center is I'm very alert to the fact that we must be wary of having high-level infrastructure in the Northern Cape and nothing else in that province. You know, so you have the instrumentation, but really the core opportunities are in Cape Town. You've got to be careful of that. So how do you balance this? And I did ask the team to advise me with a mind to ensuring that the Northern Cape does benefit, not just in Carnarvon or Sutherland, but in Kimberley as well. And as we think about a new university, how do we, you know, build these affinities across different regions in our country? And, of course, any matter that they felt pertinent to ensure continued health and functionality of our national astronomy facilities and the important SKA. We received the report in March 2011, and I know members will think we've taken very long to come before you, but it does take a while to peruse these things, think them through, and really determine what our responses might be. The report reiterated the importance of our significant investment in astronomy over the past decade, emphasized the context of the exciting developments, including the imminent full operation of SALT at that time, the construction of Meerkat, the coming into life of TAT-7, the upgrades of HESS that are underway in Namibia, and, of course, the fact that astronomy is attracting young scientists and that top international researchers are looking to South Africa as the place to do their work. The report endorsed the decadal strategy for human capacity development in astronomy and astrophysics that was prepared and handed to the department and the NRF by Professor Bharathiram in 2009. It also endorsed all aspects of the human resource pipeline, the issues of the growth of astronomy in the university sector. It set out thoughts on career paths for young researchers and support that should be made available to senior astronomers and indicated aspects that we should address. We've accepted this aspect of the recommendations as very sound, and that we will use the Bharathiram report as a report that will inform the ongoing HCD investment that the Department of Science and Technology should attend to. As members would remember, the NASP investment was a plan that was to come to an end in 2011 year. We did put some investment up to the end of this year, and we currently have a review underway. So the new strategy we'll develop out of the review will really be based on what has come out of the astronomy desk, the Halberg report process. It also recommended that the management of all astronomy should be brought under a single umbrella body through the establishment of a South African National Astronomy Agency reporting directly to the DST, and that this agency would oversee management of all facilities, funding for research and astronomy-related human capital development and astronomy outreach work. It recommended that the agency would be governed by a board with representation from universities, national facilities, industry, and international experts, and that the agency would have a CEO who would be a scientist of stature. Interesting languages. Take over current roles and obligations of the NRF with regard to astronomy once it is created. Chairperson, I am inclined, with support of the department, to accept this recommendation, but at this time, because I don't have a full sense of what the implications are, I'm stating to the committee that I accept it in principle and that I've asked the department to investigate the modalities required to give effect to this. The reason I'm saying in principle is because I believe we do need an agency or council or institute. Not sure what the name should be as yet, not sure what the budget, et cetera, and other implications might be. So until I have that detail, I'm saying accept it in principle, so there will be a standalone institution of some kind at some point, but we're not sure what as yet. But I think it's a very important recommendation and one of the most important out of the report. It indicated that the directors of optical and radio observatories should be experts in their field, supported by business managers who would oversee administrative work. We shouldn't expect scientists to be managers. And we firmly support this recommendation. Of course, the observatories must be headed by persons who know both the science and have a record in the field. The report indicated that advisory boards should be appointed for the observatories We are in the process of developing both the description of the mandate of such boards and the powers of such boards. So we've accepted this recommendation as well. I think we'll have to watch whether we will not get into a position where we have far too many boards. So we'd have to look at the size and the full mandate. And I think it's an aspect that we have to set about very, very carefully. But you do get the sense from the report that the institutions want to be free to do what they must. But, of course, we have an obligation to exercise oversight. And if there are too many, it will become extremely difficult for us. So we'll have to give careful thought as to the exact nature of what we establish and whether they actually should be termed boards because, you know, the King governance requirements and the composition of boards, so the various laws we have around structures of this kind will have to be something that we look at very, very carefully and really establish mechanisms that we are able to effectively support and manage without being overwhelmed by far too many structures. Further recommended the report that SASPO, that's the Square Kilometre Array Project Office, and HARTRAL should be merged into a single South African National Radio Observatory. Members will remember, Chairperson, that we'd already taken such a decision early in 2010, following advice given to me by the NRF board. But I did indicate to the NRF that I believed implementation of this conjoining will be something we'll have to undertake in the medium to long term because I wanted SASPO to focus on the SKA bid. And I was worried that if they start to focus on merging, they lose the bid focus, which was very urgent for me. And so I did agree to what is proposed, but I held off in its full implementation to allow time for us to focus on this SKA process. And I think I was correct, and so we still are working on the process of merger. The report also said we must maintain funding for astronomy. We shouldn't think once something is in place, you don't have to maintain it, or you might not have to have, you know, more elaborate instrumentation out of new and emerging technologies. So upgrade and maintenance is a budget item that must continue to be part of what we provide for. We agree that this is something we should support, but of course, any such innovation and change will have to be dependent on the availability of resources. But I think we should create a maintenance line item because I do recognize in South Africa funding of maintenance is a problem. We don't attend to it well enough. And so I do agree with the report that it must be uppermost in our planning. But it would have to be reasonable provision and not, you know, large scale all the time. The report also indicated that we must enhance international collaboration, especially with African states. All members would be aware that collaboration with African states has been strengthened considerably in certainly my time in office and prior to that, particularly with the 8 SKA partner countries, but generally on the African stage. Now, I was just reading this morning a report from one of our officials in the department on the first ever science conference held by the Republic of Ghana. I'm fascinated by the report and the potential it offers for partnership. But one stark matter that was absent from the conference was astronomy. And we'll have to talk to our Ghanaian colleagues as to why it wasn't a subject in that conference, which had a wide range of subjects. So clearly we've got to ensure there's consistent attention, especially in our partner countries, to this science. But we are excited that countries are beginning to hold conferences on innovation, on investment in science and technology, and that presidents of these countries are taking a keen interest in the development of research and development. Recommendation 7 was that we should strengthen national astrophysics and space sciences program with providing a second hub in the north to build on the successes we've achieved in the implementation. Happily, the DG has agreed that as we review NASP, we should have continued funding next year. So as the review undergoes, the program won't be closed. We'll continue and then, you know, build on new strategies arising out of the review. Also, a strong recommendation, and I must indicate to members that Professor Halbach took me aside on recommendation 8 and strongly argued for it. And this was that we should consider, as South Africa, a bid for the Cherenkov telescope array, which will be a successor a telescope to the Hess Gamma Ray in Namibia. We, after investigation, indicated that we would support Namibia's bid to host the telescope. The other bidding country and region is Argentina and Latin America, but we've agreed that we will support the Namibian bid. Several universities of South Africa are part of it and are supporting the Namibian bid as well. Argentinian colleagues did speak to us to support them, but we indicated that since Southern Africa, it would be very difficult to be against a Southern African country, and I think they understood the politics and necessary obligation around that. And we think the Namibian bid, with several universities, Northwest bids and so on, is an important bid and one that enjoys great interest. He proposed as well that we should retain the astronomy desk to implement or support us in implementing the proposals, particularly for the new governance and management system for astronomy. I think it was made because of the expertise residing both within the leader of the desk as well as the reference team, and of course the support that this process has enjoyed from the astronomy community. I mean, it's, you know, everybody, I think, has welcomed the report, and I've accepted this one and I've already acted. We will retain the desk. I don't really like the name desk, but it's kind of got currency at the moment. So we will have a 3-year contract appointment to it in order to ensure that we continue with the work that must be done. When we've settled on the names and composition of the desk, I will come back or through you, Chairperson, inform the committee members who will be supporting us in that regard. It was indicated that we should strengthen our international lobbying. Various colleagues speaking to Professor Halbach, both internationally but more especially internationally, indicated that South Africa wasn't lobbying enough on the international stage. The various partners and colleagues would have seen I've been absent from Parliament unusually, and it's because I'm actually executing this particular recommendation already, that we are indeed working to ensure that we speak to the various partners and others who will play a role in determining the final decision with respect to the SKA bid. I've also been attempting to visit all the partner countries of our bids to ensure our ministers are fully engaged with the work necessary for the project. And on at least 2 occasions, it's been absolutely critical that we visited those countries because it just helped to get all the work that needed to be done underway. So what are the next key steps? We will work with the appointees to the desk on the implementation plans to give effect to the recommendations. Oh, we have the name already of Professor Ramesh Bharathiram at UWC, who we've asked to be the chair of the desk. He'll be assisted by a director of astronomy who is already appointed in the DST, and we will be putting together a reference group of prominent astronomers to support the desk. It's those names that are I am still to finally determine. But that's the presentation, Chair. Thank you very much.
thank you very much, Honorable Minister. Well, here's a presentation before us. I'll allow members to make inputs on their opinion. I see the first hand here from Muchumi, Honorable Muchumi, and Shin, and then Smith, in that order. But before you make an input, there was some question that the minister seemed to want to clarify whether that would be called an agency or an institute or what. I can tell from the position of Parliament, having processed a National Energy Act and Radioactive Waste Disposal, I think it should be the institute. We'll discuss why, not agency.
Thanks, Chairperson, and let me thank the Minister for her presentation. One of my questions that the Minister covered in her presentation, that is with regard to the budget, because I was going to ask if there is any budget set aside for the implementation. But my other question, Chairperson and Minister, is with regard to, yes, the minister indicated that they are still going to study some other aspects. But in terms of the time frame for the implementation of the recommendations, when would the recommendations be fully implemented, the starting time and the completion? Because I believe that maybe the minister is supposed to be saying, we are giving ourselves a particular time from this period to this period to study, and we'll start implementing the recommendations from this until. So that's what I wanted to know. Thanks, Chairperson.
Next member, please.
Thank you, Minister. Chairperson, sorry. Minister, in Professor Helberg's report, he asked that this agency be established as soon as possible. And he said he gave an example of the fact that SANSA took 5 years, and he asked that this agency not take as long. And yet they also said that he suggested that the astronomy desk should continue for a year. You've extending it for 3 years. So does that mean that you don't envisage this agency being implemented within the next 5 to 10 years, next decade? So that was a concern to me, because the astronomers are wanting to get going with this, because they obviously have lots happening on their plate fairly soon. You talked about the sighting of the SK office, and you mentioned Kimberley and some sort of university perhaps up there. The main astronomy universities are Cape Town and other places. Surely the wealth of the talent is here, and to actually try and establish a grassroots astronomy observatory in the Northern Cape might not be that feasible and attractive. Then the appointees to the desk, is this director of astronomy going to be a person in the department? And who is that person? And then what's going to happen to Professor Chetty, please, who's involved? And then just some other, if you know of it, what's happening about a replacement for Professor Phil Charles, how that goes? And also whether, once this agency desk is established, will astronomy be separated out of the space science program? Because I know Professor Helberg was quite critical of the fact that the sort of satellite side of space science was coupled with astronomy, and felt that didn't really mix. So I'm wondering if that is being revised as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. I've been covered on the time frame and a couple of other items, but maybe just some smaller questions. The third recommendation dealing with the observatories being experts, the directors being experts supported by business managers, I find it quite interesting language, business managers, because it's a very corporatist approach. You would think administrators or something. And I want to make sure that we're not talking about the tail wagging the dog here, because there are many instances of policy and implementation being at loggerheads. I mean, municipal governance is a good example. You often get conflicts where your business manager, as it were, and the mayor don't see eye to eye. So here I presume we're talking about the director leading policy and the managers taking guidance from them, not the other way around, because it does worry me a bit. I do agree also with you, Minister, on the proliferation of boards per observatory. I mean, it would be really problematic, and one would want to rationalise that. On the issue of the DISC and the three-year contract appointment, are you able to tell us what that costs, or is it a purely, you know, I mean, what are the financial implications of it? And then I don't think we've seen you since your presentation, the whole SKA thing. It would be interesting if you were just, because you did speak about the lobbying anyway, if you were just to give some sort of flavour of how it went, your experience, and how our country bid was received. But all in all, I'm very excited by this. I think it's a wonderful development, and the sooner the better.
I think, yeah, that's it, Minister. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I wish I could have more time out, you know, with the committee, because the committee asks really important questions, and I'm certainly going to impose myself on yourself. You know, more from, you know, time to time to talk about other areas as well. Ms. Mujumi, on the budget, I think we have a budget for astronomy as a department, which is primarily administered by the NRF. And I think the NRF made its presentation to yourselves yesterday, and you would have seen with respect to astronomy, I think they indicated a figure of $342 million as the budget utilized in the past financial year. That includes SKA, the observatory, SALT, and other provisions that the NRF provides for. So there is a budget available for astronomy within the department. Time frame, both yourself and Ms. Shivan and Mr. Smith have shown an interest in this. Must be, I think, the plan should be ready by mid-2012, and I would say implementation 2013, because given that it's not in our current budget, I can't say 2012, but definitely 2013, which means before I'm out of this office, we should see something in place. And I do believe that it's important for us to work with haste, because we must show the world we're serious. Because South Africa's really taken a position on the astronomy sciences, and the world must see an institution in place to understand that we actually regard this as a growth area for us in RDI terms. So I think 2013 is the time frame I'm looking at for at least the basic infrastructure to be in place. Now, I was not proposing that there be an SKA office in the Northern Cape, or that we move, all that we have in the Cape out of the Cape. But the point I'm making is we have to think about what do we leave as an investment in Northern Cape, given the presence of these, because it shouldn't just be that, you know, everybody comes, even if it's to have within the University Minister Zimande's planning an astrophysics department. There must be something that indicates this is the geographic heart of astronomy, and there's an intellectual part to it, a scientific part. So that's what I mean. And, of course, the colleagues in Cape Town, KZN, Rhodes, and Northwest in Port who are working in these areas will assist us to develop, because I've been speaking to them about it, something in the Northern Cape, be it in engineering, technology, ICT. But the Northern Cape must benefit in some way. I'm just uncomfortable that it's just the place which has the geographic advantage, and everything else, intellectual and technological, happens where, you know, the universities are. So it's really to look at the proposals around the university and really see whether we can use that as the base for developing either ICT facilities, a data center, or a program for engineering or astrophysics within the university, so that the Northern Cape can say, out of our geographic advantage, we accrued these intellectual and job-creating attributes. That's what I'm referring to. So it doesn't detract from the strength in Cape Town, Grahamstown, Durban, and other centres. Well, Professor Chetty was appointed by the NRF. The NRF board took the decision. They didn't come to me beforehand. They told me after. And so that's their baby to handle. I'm proceeding on the basis of my organized program arising from our policy thinking with the DG and the department and the informed perspective of the astronomy desk. We have asked the DG to speak to the CEO of the NRF to see how we can complement each other so that we don't have this duplication or a competition which might be unfortunate. So the DG is engaged in that process because I recognize the need for us to actually work closely together. But I do repeat that the NRF actually kind of went its own way on this. On the observatory director, I understand the process is underway. Candidates were interviewed. I'm not privy to what the outcomes are at the moment, and I'm sure we will hear very soon. But I know that there were candidates. In fact, I even met a candidate at the Physics Society conference in Austin in Texas. So the process is underway. Will astronomy be dealing from space science? Yes, I think. Well, I'd like them to work together. I think SANSA has some important contributions to make, but I don't think it can reside under SANSA. It's big enough to have its own life in space, and that's why the desk was asked to do this investigation. On business managers, you remind me, you sound almost like Minister Nzimande, strangely enough. He doesn't like the term human capital, which we use a lot. He says, why don't I say human development? So because I know what I mean when I say human capital. But anyway, I'm just teasing you, Mr. Smith. Business managers, we're really talking of people who will manage the administration of the observatory, because a lot of scientists are saying managing lots of grants, ensuring PFMA is observed, ensuring, you know, that we prepare budget each year, budget reports, not really quite our interest. We want to be working with PhD students, MSCs. We want to be thinking about new technological architecture rather than seeing to completing an invoice and so on. So we're saying there must be support provided to them so that they have an administrator in place with the financial and administrative skills necessary, but the director be responsible for the science and for directing the research and development program. That's what we mean. the financial implications of the desk, maybe DGU could speak to that. On the SKA lobbying, I think both countries have a very strong bid, really. And I, if I were to assess South Africa and Australia at the Canada conference, I'd say South Africa did very well. But if I was to assess Australia and South Africa in the rugby, I'd say I'm really disappointed. And, you know, I'm looking to the final with great interest because I'm going to take it as a portent of that octopus at the World Cup, hopefully. But I think our team has done amazingly well. We've been meeting a range of leaders in science, but also research institutions. Our recent meetings in the United States in Washington went exceptionally well. And of course, I don't know whether we've shared with the colleagues what's happened with respect to paper and the fact that the National Science Foundation, in one of its budget decisions, has decided to support the expansion of the paper project at the SKA site. So 32 more antennae would be added to build 64, and because they're saying they're getting good science there. And the scientists in the United States want it to be grown to 128 dishes. But for now, funding has been provided for 32 more. So we're very excited because it's a confirmation of the excellence of the site. We have, as I said, been visiting our partner countries in Africa. We're proceeding with the beginnings of the conversion of, you know, the satellite dishes that we've spoken of in the last meeting we had. Ghana, we've had a donation from Vodafone of a satellite dish, and it's currently being converted. Very exciting work is being done. We're working with Namibia at the Maulana Science Park that they're currently building with the support of India and China. We will be supporting them to establish the foundations for a Mozambique radio astronomy site. So, you know, there's exciting development happening. And, you know, we've had excellent media, and one can pick it up both from Europe as well as from the meeting in Qatar of journalists in science, where we got very good feedback in terms of, you know, on the website and various sites on science. A number of journals picked up the SKA story of South Africa. We were very fortunate to be invited to the Qatar meeting, so we're able to have an exhibition of the SKA. Our other building partners didn't, so it boosted our presence in terms of the mind of journalists working in the arena of research and development. So we've done a lot. We've been given a date to address the Science and Technology Committee of the EU next month. So I will be going to the EU Parliament to address them, and we'll be meeting colleagues in the United Kingdom. As you know, it's already one of the partner countries, and the SKA office is located there. The governance structure seems to be developing its foundation there. So we're continuing to do the work. But it's kind of one day and then back, not too much time, because one doesn't want to spend one's time doing only this kind of work, but it is an intensive process that we engage in. That's why I've got dark marks here. Don't sleep. I hope I've answered the question. There's some awful ones. If I could tell you, if we could relate the stories, some of them are really terrible.
I think that just allow the DG also has to cover something. Yeah.
Thanks. The chair of the desk going forward would be somebody seconded from the university, so we'll have to pay not his salary, but his time associated with the work of the desk. Dr. Sigo is already employed in the department, who will be assisting, I think, the chair. And then we are intending to employ an intern who might do detailed background and desktop studies. And then, of course, there will be the cost of the reference group attending meetings, flights, venues, and so forth. So our estimate is that this would be equivalent to a director's salary in the public service, so not more than that.
Yes, okay.
Thanks, Chair. Minister, it was just that I just wanted to ask you as a follow-up whether there's any truth to the rumor that there was, you know, after the presentations for the BIDISCA, that there's sort of an increasing feeling that perhaps neither country should get it, and that there should be some sort of a joint awarding to the two countries. Is there any substance to that, or is it very much either-or at the moment?
I've heard this rumor, but none of the members of the various committees have ever mentioned that to me. But some of the colleagues in either of the bids have, including the South African colleagues. And so it seems in the bars, because I don't go to the bars. We have a colleague who we send there at each conference meeting, but I don't, and he gives me, you know, some of the gossip. So I hear that it's mentioned, and he really does seem to enjoy the bar a lot. But, But he gives me reports, and it's not the DG, nor any of my officials. It's a special person that we designate for this. So it's been mentioned, but I don't think it's a concrete option that's on the table. And we really wait to hear. Both myself and Minister Carr indicated in Canada that we want a decision by next year, because we want to know where we stand as the two countries.
Right. Any further input, honourable members? If not, then thank you very much, Minister. I think we have to thank the Minister. He's put it very, very clearly. We know where we stand, and I think that we must all work towards the development of these new offices. Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. I think I'll allow the next delegation of presenters to come forward.
I will make a short joke. Yes. So working on it. So best once we write together one.
Okay, I think let's start the next session, honourable members. Let's allow the Director General to give us a presentation on the annual report. Director General.
Thanks, Chair. And again, thanks to the members for the opportunity. And, of course, I always appreciate the support of the DST staff. And today, because we have the Minister, I'm also thanking the Minister for her support. In fact, she's the acting President, so we should actually have stood up when she came here this morning, but nevertheless. Thank you. Okay, so we know the vision and mission of the work that we do, but we always just remind ourselves what it is. And then we also just like to remind the honorable members the key objectives of the department, what we're trying to do. And then we always want to just share the update on this driver for this work that we're doing, the National System of Innovation. It's an important activity. And then we'll go to each of the program and just give some highlights, with the understanding that the details are included in the annual report. And then there is two or three slides that look at some selected indicators and how we've performed against those. Again, this is detailed in the report, and the financial performance of the department, and then we would make some concluding remarks. So we would like to create a prosperous society that derives enduring and equitable benefits from science and technology. To do this, we have to develop, coordinate, and manage a national system of innovation that will bring about maximum human capital, sustainable economic growth, and improved quality of life for all. We have, as you remember, 5 goals in the department. The first one is to enhance our knowledge generation capacity in order to produce world-class research papers and turn some of the findings into innovative products and processes. We'd like to have the appropriate science, technology, and innovation human capital that are required to meet the needs of the society. We need to build a world-class science and technology and innovation infrastructure. I think the presentation and the discussion we've had around the astronomy desk fits exactly this purpose. And then we also would like to position South Africa as a strategic international research development and innovation partner and a destination through the exchange of knowledge, capacity, and resources between South Africa and its regional neighbors as well as international partners. And then, of course, if we want to turn the research results into useful products and services, we need this engine, the National System of Innovation, that will be the driver for the socio-economic development. So I just want to contextualize the presentation that under the progress that we have made towards the NSI, that we do know that we don't have a fully-fledged National System of Innovation. But we believe that some important building blocks have been put in place, and of course they need to be enhanced further. So let's talk about some of these. Under institution building, I will say a few words about this. And under coordination, some ideas on what we're trying to do, I will talk about this. Because I think this is an important part of the work that we do sometimes, which is not visible in just the targets and indicators that one presents in the annual report. You are aware of the Technology Innovation Agency has been established, and I believe that last week, there was a presentation by the TIA on what they have done. We can give you some highlights as well. Another important and perhaps not so visible work is the work that the committee did when it passed the IPR Act for publicly financed R&D, and then, of course, the setting up of the National Intellectual Property Management Office, which we have now set up at the Innovation Hub. We have introduced this idea of bringing universities and science councils together through centers of competence, and I think in the interim update on our implementation to the strategy plan, we gave you an example of some of the COCs, I think, towards the end of August, and then, of course, research development and innovation to support sector competitiveness in the movement of sectors. This is just, again, to remind everybody and, again, to thank the support we've had on the Portfolio Committee on our attempt to reach 1% of the GDP investment as a percentage of GDP. As you all know, the last survey showed that we were sitting at 0.92%. So we still hope that for the 2010 numbers which haven't come, we'll still be able to reach 1%. That's what we're trying to do there. And however, having said that, we always remind ourselves that if we compare ourselves with the OECD average, we're still far, 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 far below. And therefore, hopefully, again, as the minister continues the work to advise cabinet on how perhaps to get to 1.5%, we'll be able to set a new target in the next coming months. But also not just the targets, but also to demonstrate that the money that is invested is really bearing some fruits, and that's what I'll be doing in the next couple of slides. So you know the 5 DST programs, Corporate Services, Research Development and Innovation Program 2, International Cooperation and Resources Program 3, Human Capital and Knowledge System, Socio-Economic Partnerships, and all of the work that we're doing is really driven by 3 policy papers that you're all aware of, the White Paper on Science and Technology, the National Research and Development Strategy 2002, and the 10-year Innovation Plan 2008. So this first program, Program 2, is responsible for corporate services and governance. It's responsible for the overall management of the DST, central support to funded organizations to comply with good governance
practices and alignment to the strategic focus of the NSI, things like the appointment of boards, the monitoring of the quarterly reports, and then monitoring and evaluation of the science councils, follow up on the recommendations on their reviews. So we are of the opinion that the reports of the key performance indicators that were set up were completed, and the report on the performance of all science, engineering, and technology innovation organizations was compiled. And we, of course, look at these and see whether the targets that were set have been met by the SETIs. We, again, are happy to report that we obtained an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General, and they reported that there were no material findings on the annual performance report. Under Program 2, this program is responsible for the space science, hydrogen and energy innovation instruments and planning, biotechnology and health, and then it aims to provide policy leadership in long-term and cross-cutting research and innovation activities. Now, space science engineering, you are aware that we had this space strategy that aimed to harness the benefits of space science and technology for socio-economic growth and sustainable development. And some of the highlights, as you all know, is that in December, finally, the National Space Agency was launched, and the launch of the Space Weather Center at the Hermanas Magnetic Observatory. I can't remember, Minister, when he did this, but I think this was another very important milestone in this activity. On the square kilometer array, just some updates. The building blocks, in the form of professionals and experts are stationed now within the department in a unit called Radio Astronomy Advances, and the South African SKA Project Office, which is a segment of the DST. We think we have the people who know what needs to be done. And then there is a total of 100 scientists and engineers responsible for the SKA project. The last time we were here, we had invited the portfolio committee to visit the site here in Pinelands just to see the work that the youngsters are doing on the SKA project. I hope that has happened, but we still would like to extend the invitation on their behalf for you to visit what they do. Okay, so what they've done is, as you know, the 7 dishes have been completed. The dishes were made of fiberglass. It's the first time that this has happened. And then the, as you all know, this is an engineering prototype for the Meerkat, and it has allowed a lot of lessons to be learned around how the next set of dishes need to be constructed and all the details around that. And in fact, it has already delivered some images of some of the galaxies I think this was just a trial run, whether you can actually see the galaxies using this telescope. On the human capital development program, 62 new bursaries were awarded to students, and there were 6 postdoctoral fellows that received scholarships, 6 postdoc PhDs, 12 MSCs, 12 honors, 3 BTEC, and 10 undergraduate students, and so forth, and 2 such chairs have already been awarded. We have an exchange program where 2 South African students are supervised by Oxford, one by Hertfordshire in the UK, one Berkeley and Caltech in the United States of America. This, again, may be a story that we have already told, but we are proud of the work that I think is being done by the project office by trying to convert this dish in Ghana, which was donated by Vodafone for astronomy-related activities. And as you all know, in Botswana, again, they've expressed an interest to develop a radio astronomy observatory, and the minister has already highlighted some advances that we are doing with Mozambique, both in terms of a teaching and learning telescope, which will be built in the site that the minister talked about, but also to begin to develop capacity for people who are being trained at the Durban University of Technology who will actually be involved in the construction of dishes should we win the bid in Mozambique. Of course, there are a range of opportunities that are presented by the Meerkat and SK opportunities, which we are looking at, and I've listed some of them there.
Under the hydrogen and fuel cell technologies, we are also very, very proud of the breakthroughs that have been made in one of the centers and, of course, the others. But the one in the Western Cape seemed to have taken the lead in terms of making some useful strides. Again, last time we made an invitation for the committee members to visit them. You all know about the successful story of us partnering with Anglo-American and U.S. company in order to bring both the technology and the expertise around the development of hydrogen and fuel cell technologies industry in South Africa. We have been able to really do, of course, the center. The numbers are here in terms of the human capital development contribution that has been done in the center. And other breakthroughs in terms of research that they are doing in terms of the fuel cell technologies that are going to be indigenous. And in fact, next year, perhaps when we come and brief you, we'll tell you about some of the successes they've had with a German company that allows us to manufacture the membranes in the fuel cell in South Africa, and this will be exported to the rest of the world. On the bioeconomy strategy, perhaps on the health side of the strategy, you are all familiar with the announcement that was done by the consortium or the Center for AIDS program of research in South Africa at UKZN, where they have made the finding that using this tenofovir gel, you can have a 39% risk of being infected with HIV, especially around women. Of course, these findings need to be confirmed before the gel can be licensed, and then there are follow-on studies that we are currently, together with partners, trying to take forward. And then, as you can see, the consortium that is part of the follow-on African consortium on these technophobic studies has already started to do the work on confirmatory studies at 9 sites in South Africa. I'm not expecting you to read this slide, but as you can see, there are various aspects of this study going forward that require some funding. So what we have done is we've broken it down and we've given you the purpose of each of these studies going forward and the progress up to March 2011 on each of the aspects of the study. Again, I hope you are able to read and take the questions if they are in. The one part of this study, perhaps, which we have not made a lot of noise about was that when the consortium or when the University of KZN negotiated the provision of gel by this Canadian company, there was an agreement that as time goes on, if we make progress on the gel, we probably might be in a position of establishing a plan for the manufacturing of gel and then have the rights to distribute it to the rest of SADC. And this work is now continuing at full pace in order to explore how we can then have a manufacturing facility. So not only will we be able to improve the quality of life, but we will be able to probably over time generate money out of this. Technology Innovation Agency, this was listed as a Schedule 3A entity, and the CEO was appointed in September, and the full migration of the entities that were earmarked for migration into TIA was done by 31st of October, and then, of course, the four regional offices were perhaps established and strengthened. The National Intellectual Property Office, the Interim Administration Office, has been now moved into the Innovation Hub. And in the conversations that we've had with the newly appointed head of NIPMO, he said they've done some initial studies that indicate that the inventions disclosures in the universities has gone up substantially. So we've asked him to put measures to really quantify this, because this would be the first step of demonstrating that universities are really looking at the research they're doing and they're examining which of the research has the potential to be commercialized, patented, and maybe a license for the revenue that would come into the country. Another interesting success is the four new offices of technology transfer that were established in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, and in the Eastern Cape. These, in certain instances, don't serve one university, for the intensive universities, we tend to locate these at the intensive universities, but they service other universities. If I remember very well, the one in the Eastern Cape is based at NMMU, but it services Rhodes, Fort Hare, and Walter Sisulu University. So again, and then over time, if the other universities demonstrate the increase in research capacity, they could have their own. National Space Agency, again, I think we've talked about this. Under international cooperation, they are responsible for our program in the rest of the continent and our multilateral collaboration. They are responsible for bringing in some resources, and then they are also responsible on bilateral collaboration. So we've been very successful in ensuring that at an international level we leverage additional funding that comes into the system. And we've been particularly successful with countries like Finland, the EU, Germany, Japan, and some partners from the USA. Within the EU, every year we have a dialogue that looks at a number of areas on space science, on energy, social sciences, and humanities. And these dialogues are very, very useful in making sure that at least we are aligned on the challenges that we have and they have, and then it helps us then to develop the programs that allow us to access the funding. In fact, out of the 184 million, Professor Afdeheide, Dr. Afdeheide will correct me, the bulk of the money comes from the EU. We've also spent a fair amount of time in ensuring that the discussions that we have at the EU level also benefits the rest of the continent. We now, in fact, last week I was in a dialogue between the EU and the African partner countries to look at how we can align the activities between EU as well as the African continent as a whole. We've also played a very, very important role in ensuring that the South-South cooperation, IPSA in particular, and we are now part of the Science and Technology Forum under the BRICS umbrella as an important forum for really enhancing South-South collaboration. What we have, would like to share it with our neighbors, and recently I think there was a SADC high performance computing workshop that was held in Cape Town, and I think, Minister, if I'm not correct, already there's a huge interest in Tanzania to look at how they could also benefit by setting up a center for high performance computing. And then on the work that we are doing in climate change, we've had two workshops to look at the climate change around the SADC, and this has led into a science, technology, and innovation climate change framework within SADC. And this is very, very useful because we've had huge interest from donors who are willing to fund climate change-related activities within the continent, and this framework has already allowed us to have a first conversation, for instance, with the Switzerland, I think, development agency on how they can work with us in funding the programs and perhaps extend the work that we've been doing on the Risk and Vulnerability Atlas and as an example to the other SADC states as well. This program is responsible for human capital and science platforms, indigenous knowledge system, emerging research areas and infrastructure. And some highlights, as you know, that we are trying to increase the number of research chairs from 82 to 92. This was, of course, before the announcement that the minister has made, but because we are reporting on 2010, 2011, and this number is continuously increasing, as you know. With the current call, we have increased the number of bursaries, both in size and in numbers. And then also we are beginning to pay attention to how many female students at the postgraduate levels we are supporting. And we've got some very interesting statistics on the performance of the centers of excellence and the number of postgraduate students that I think are coming out and are supported out of the centers of excellence, and the numbers are here. And again, we also see that as part of these numbers, we also have a very, very good increase in the number of female students in particular. So we're very, very happy about this. Of course, we'll continue to monitor this. On the science awareness, 23 centers were awarded development grants because we think these are important agents for making sure that science awareness goes into where it's supposed to do. And then there were 2,700 learners that were supported with supplementary tuition
in these fields in the Dina Reddy schools that we have adopted as a DST. And then, of course, we've had huge success or an increase in the number of learners that participate into our Youth into Science initiative, in particular the National Science Week. These are some of the examples and the interest and the pictures showing one of the schools as part of the National Science Week. On the research development and innovation infrastructure, we are happy to report that we have increased the internet connectivity as part of the SANREN project, where 50 research institutions were now connected to SANREN. And because of this, we have enabled the RTPS Hook Radio Astronomy Observatory to participate in an international electronic very long baseline interferometry experiment. The minister showed the picture of the site at RTPS Hook being able to lead to other interferometry. And we've also been able to allow researchers from the Sumbandila SET project to send and receive data from satellite much faster than through conventional networks. So it's already beginning to be a very useful infrastructure. Again, this is just to give you a sense of where we are in terms of the sites that have been connected. The blue is the backbone of SANREN, and then the yellow are the ones where the construction is in progress, and then the beige or the brown are the proposed extensions, and then, of course, the CECOM Tenet a cable at Mtunzini to connect us to the east cable. The last program, the socio-economic partnership, the aim there is look at science and technology for economic impact, social impact, as well as to really help us to monitor the science and technology investments. And they are really trying to provide direction, setting, and support for R&D-led growth and value-adding industries, and they enable government, industry, and the general public to understand and deal with the challenges of global change better. So just to highlight some of the successes that we've had in this case is that in the Eastern Cape, we've been able, through the Accelerating Sustainable Water Service Delivery Reticulation, provide access to these communal stations. Of course, this is the work that is done particularly by the CSIR. We have also, in this program, have a number of research networks that we have done where the university science councils and the private sector work together in order to explore either the knowledge generation, but also in particular the exploitation of that knowledge for R&D industrial development. So we are happy not this time to talk about titanium because we've reported on this, but there is progress that we are making there. On Zircon as well, there is progress that we are making there, as well as some precious metal industries. We've also, this year, the minister launched this technology assistant package program where 26 companies are provided with technology support in order for them to be able to provide or to win the financial or contracts to support the activities of the state-owned enterprises. It's the first start of supporting these companies. The idea is that some of these companies are providing support at the lowest tier, and our aim is to help them to move from lower level to higher level and be able to be sustainable on the one hand, but to be able to add value to the work that I think is done. In this. And then we've been able to make some progress in terms of policy dialogues and engagement. In other words, it's one thing to pay attention in doing science, but if science cannot really help local government and business, it is not useful. So, for instance, one of the things that we've done is to look at the way in which the work of the Risk and Vulnerability Atlas could be adopted by business as well as local government. And the series of policy dialogue with social cluster has already been initiated with the support of the Human Sciences and Research Council. Again, this is just to give you a sense of the progress on some of the patents that have been filed in some of the areas that we are funding through this program. In the Claymont area, not far from here in the Western Cape, as you all know, we worked with the CSIR to look at
constructing houses relatively cheaper using alternative technology. And we are then looking at the possibility of also making sure that some of these houses are fitted with solar water geysers, and therefore this pilot, I think, is being rolled out here in Claymont. Again, the portfolio committee members are welcome to see this pilot. Okay. Poverty alleviation, we continue to look at the demonstration of agronomy science, where, as you know, we have embarked on medicinal plants, essential oils, food crops, and aquaculture job creation projects. At this point, we do like to say that even though we've made some successes in these areas, we think that one of the challenges we have is the full uptake of some of these initiatives and the rolled out in massive scales. And of course, we are spending a lot more time now in engaging with either local governments, provincial governments, as well as specific government departments for the uptake of these. But for now, we've been able to sustain 467 job opportunities for the communities that are benefiting from these initiatives. Again, these are the pictures of the work that we are doing in abalone hatcheries. You've seen these in the medicinal plants, in the Eastern Cape, food crop nurseries, essential oil distillation, where you take the plant and you start to we've provided funding for the infrastructure in terms of the distillation equipment for these essential oils. And we have the possibility of really having a huge small SMME developed out of these funding initiatives. So these are some of the targets that we had set out in the estimates of national expenditure. I was just saying to Tulani, who has been coordinating the work and preparation for this, that we apologize that we seem to have selected those where we've achieved things. But of course, in the annual report, there are others that we have not achieved. So again, I'm not spending time giving you the details, but we think in some of these targets that we have set up, we've been successful in certain instances meeting the targets and certain instances exceeding the targets, but of course, in others, we've not really met the targets. This is a new learning experience for us, and as we get better, we are beginning to ask ourselves two things. How do we make sure that we still set stretch targets, even if we don't meet them? And therefore, in certain instances, when we don't meet them, it's because we think perhaps we have stretched ourselves. In certain instances, we think we really haven't fully appreciated how long it takes, how long a process takes. For instance, it's one thing to have a patent, but if you want to set up an industry or to have a demonstrator and set up an industry, we've now learned that it takes much, much longer than we think. So, but anyway, these are some of the things that we think we have achieved. On the number of students, we think, again, we're doing reasonably well. The number of technologies under development, we think we're doing reasonably well. The internship program seems to be, again, a good initiative of the work that we do. The minister has told us that this is not enough. We should increase this, so we are looking at increasing the number of interns that we support. The funding, again, as I've said, we seem to be successful in attracting funding to come to South Africa. And then, of course, under the research initiatives, we've talked about the CAPRISA program. And, of course, we are looking at expanding the functional centers of excellence. Number of learners that are participating in our Youth into Science, that is beginning to be a success story. One of the concerns, of course, we have is whether we are able to track these students and get a sense of whether the fact that they were participating into our Youth into Science strategy, do we really have them taking science careers further down the line? This is something that we are working on at the moment. And then the other success story is the ability to have joint initiatives that we are doing with a number of countries in the rest of the continent. Again, the numbers are there. So under financial performance, we are happy to report that out of the amount that was voted to us this year, we've been able to spend 98% of the funds, and this is what the green is in relation to blue, so we're unable to spend 2% of the funding
At the highest level, the reason is that sometimes we are unable to disperse the funds because we are not happy with either the reports that we have received, and therefore there is a lag time between when we get the report, analyze them, and the time that we disperse the funds. We are trying to improve that by working with the entities that have to submit these reports to, and maybe push the time for the receiving of the reports in the department much, much earlier. Again, this is to say that only 1.8% of the funds were not used with an unqualified audit yet again, and this is the demographic representation of the people in the department. So in conclusion, we hope that we have achieved and met most of the performance targets, and as I've said, we know that we haven't met the others. We continue to give human capital development a priority, and we've seen the numbers and the successes that we're beginning to have. The innovation instruments that have been put in place are beginning to show that we are moving in the right direction in terms of converting our research results into prototypes. Our problem, as I've said, is how do we upscale some of these activities and how do we make sure that they are fully commercialized or there's a full uptake of some of these initiatives. We apologize we didn't spend 1.8%, and also, of course, we are happy with the performance by the entities that report to the DST. And I believe yesterday you also had a report from the HSRC and the CSIR. So we think we still play an important role in ensuring that the entities also deliver. So I think I'd like to thank you and like to suggest that all the DDGs that are here take the questions that
Well, I think I like what I have heard myself. I think Tulani did very well because I remember he said, hey, there are many things that I'm picking up which need to be reported, and like, I'm very happy they are here. Myself, I'm satisfied about the way you have presented the report, actually, to show direct effect of the technology parameter in the economic growth of a nation. That's one of the three important parameters that govern economic growth. These days, many developed economies, actually, they depend on the technology parameter. And if we're talking about knowledge economy, that's exactly what it should do. I'm very happy to see that myself. But I'll allow members to interact with you. They may have a different opinion. I see Honorable Smith, after that Shin, after that Lai, in that order.
Actually, Chair, you don't have a member with a contrary opinion. I actually agree with you on the report, so I'd like to congratulate both the Minister and her team under the DG for another keen audit and what I think is a good performance. So, well done. However, there are some questions, of course, so let's fire away. There was a controversy a while ago, you remember, despite the keen audit, this thing in the Sowetan, which I don't quite understand, to be honest with you, because reading it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, and you did refute it. But nonetheless, you could speak to perhaps the items on page 141, you know, under expenditure and the fruitless expenditure. You do say one of them is under investigation, and maybe just speak to the three items as to, you know, what happened and so on. You haven't spoken in this report to your staffing issues at all, but just to say, I mean, you have a vacancy rate that's probably a bit higher than you would like, and at the senior management level in particular. Your chief operations officer issue, we don't even know how long that vacancy's been there. You've got acting deputy DGs. So perhaps speak to that issue of why there's an issue here. Although you spoke to although DG spoke to, of course, what has been achieved in respect of these indicators, and I think you have achieved most of what you wanted, maybe you could speak a little bit more to the ones you didn't achieve. Now, I do understand the logic of saying if you set high targets and you don't meet them, you can't be lambasted for it, because then the tendency is simply you'll set lower targets each year, just knowing you've got to go for something that's safe and it has no meaning. So you have to stretch yourself a bit. But, you know, there are no research chairs, for example. What happened there? There were no technology-based companies established. Now, the target was 5. Now, presumably that target was set knowing, you know, that the state of transition in terms of tier and so on. So, you know, speak to that perhaps. And some of the other targets, you know, the agro-processing aquaculture, there was a target there not met as well. But otherwise, I think you met most of those targets there, so I'm pleased with those. It's not really a matter for the national for the report, but you did mention in your slide, I can't see a number, right at the beginning, when you spoke about the NSI, you say we don't have a fully-fledged NSI yet. And I'm not quite sure, actually, in my head, that I understand that statement. What's involved in the NSI being fully-fledged as opposed to a nascent one or something? Because I thought ours was fully-fledged, but simply that it's sort of maybe not as expansive as something else, but maybe that's the same thing. Sorry, I'm just going through my notes here. Oh, yeah, this Caprisa trial story on page, I can't remember the slide number now. There's no number here. You spoke about the Caprisa trials, and when we saw them a couple of months ago, you spoke, for example, about the Caprisa 008 and that the fact the funding is there from DST and USAID. Now, when we saw them, it was only two or three months ago, there was no funding from us. The funding was only from USAID, and their complaint was that the government is not putting, I think it was $39 million that was required, $13 million over 3 years each, and the complaint there was that the funding wasn't forthcoming, and there's no sense of urgency by government to fast-track Caprisa 008. That's what they told us directly. So I'm just trying to get clarity here. Is this that missing $39 million that suddenly miraculously appeared? If so, good. Chair, on the TIA, I do understand all the issues of TIA, you know, establishment, all the rest of it. And but one of the concerns I certainly have, and when we met them the other day, it was raised again, but it still seems to be unsatisfactory. The issue being that for each separate investment, I mean, you have to have this protocol with Treasury, and it has to be sanctioned on a case-by-case basis. Is there no ways that there cannot be a generic approach? Because as TIA succeeds in doing what it's going to do, it's going to have to be running cap in hand for each and every case to Treasury to get exemptions. I think that's a totally unsatisfactory approach. It's very ad hoc, and it's not appropriate. Is there no way there could be a protocol which is more generic in nature that allows them to do the job in terms of the way you conceptualize them doing it? That's all I've got. I can see. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Chin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Peter's touched on a lot of the things that I want to talk about on some of the missed targets, and a feeling I sort of increasingly have, and maybe, Minister, one day we'll get to hear what your review committee has said on this, but sometimes I think that we're actually chasing too much stuff, and perhaps we're too scattered, and that part of the reason why we're missing some of the targets is we're trying to do too much. But three of my pet projects were not achieved at all. The biodiversity, for example. Now, I know we keep talking about bioeconomy, and we still don't have a strategy on that, and yet we're meant to be one of the world leaders in 5 years' time, I think it is, or we were hoping to be. That is such a key area of activity for us. I mean, it's where we can really play a major role in international science on this, and we're just not doing it. The other one, as I was disappointed to see that was sort of shelved, was the Antarctic Research Strategy Plan. Now, I see that we put that aside because we had astronomy at the desk to sort out. So can you please sort of explain why, Antarctica, which is critical to our understanding of global science, global change, is put on hold, particularly as next year we have our new ship coming down. And obviously we need to fight for more than our fair share of usage of that. And then again, the research chairs. We spoke with the NRF yesterday. Understand that there are challenges, but what are we doing to be innovative in bringing in the wealth of expertise that is available for chairs? We talked, I think, with the NRF last year, perhaps about a virtual model. If there's any serious innovation happening to address that problem, your staff turnover seemed a bit of problem. With the notes to the appropriation statement, I noticed there was all a variance on expenditure to all sorts of people turning over. It talked about, explanation of material variances. Okay, now this isn't serious stuff, but they're all due to, this is page 109, all these variances are due to staff turnover and resultant administrative costs. Did you have a higher turnover than was expected, or you stopped just asking more money to leave? I see travel is up 10 million rand. I presume next year it's going to be a lot higher, thanks to Minister Pandor's excellent sales efforts on SKA. So I'm quite sure it's going to be more than 10 million, but I don't think that that's necessarily a train set. Then also, I was pleased to see, page 130, material losses, that no one damaged the Deputy Minister's vehicle this year, although they did last year, and that the damages to hired and private vehicles had gone down. But then I turned the page, and on page 133, I see nearly 418,000 rand was spent on damages to vehicles, was the cost of damages to vehicles. What are you guys doing? That's page 133. Recoverable expenditure. Now, presumably you claimed it back from the staff or insurance or something. But, I mean, $500,000 on damaged vehicles is quite a lot. Then claims against government departments. I see the presidency managed to pay his bill last year and the Department of Defense, but I see the presidency again owes us 67 million. 67,000. Sorry. just curious to know what that is. And then obviously your staff vacancy rates, the highest 16% being in senior management levels, that's obviously a concern. Do we really not have the scientists in the country, or are there other factors at play there? Thank you.
Honourable Lyne.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Singh has already touched on this one, but what I want to know, has the department already completed the bioeconomic strategy, and when will we brief as a committee on that? And on the slide of Caprisa, of that Novofor gel, one could get the feeling that there is something wrong, or there might be a deliberate delay from the medical board, of the medical review board. Yeah. So I just want to know, is there any intervention from the department side? And yesterday, Sanos was appearing before the committee. I just want to know that they don't have a CFO, and when can we expect the CFO to be appointed? Sansa. Yeah, and finance person to the board. A dedicated finance person to the board. Sorry. Yeah. It's like doesn't have numbers, so I'm juggling around. But let me stop there and check.
Yeah. Finally, yesterday I complained a lot about CSIR. We had a briefing from CSIR that a lot they do a lot of very super things, but they are not communicated. I am thinking that probably the department, because in any event, CSIR is part of our entity, that some kind of beef up in communication strategy. You see, at least the minister has shown in a few months recently that we can do that. In SKA now is appearing from here and there, time and again. Everybody now is aware that there is some SKA. But there are so many things in CSIR that we saw when we were there which are not communicated. For instance, the hydrogen economy and fuel cell technology, as you say, it's very advanced. The new breakthroughs that they have there in nanotechnology, it's not communicated. that built environment that you were talking about, these housing, which are role models for rolling out in the country, nobody knows about them. There are such a lot of things that are happening in there. The wind atlas, the solar atlas, all those kinds of things. It's a lot, and I think the department must come into assistance. I discussed a lot yesterday about it. You know, we need to change. What else did I want to talk about? Well, I've forgotten, but I think that was the thing that came to me quick. This coastal engineering, I think the project here, very advanced thing. Yeah, and these are some of the things that we need to talk about, because they are very important projects. They generate a lot of money. When they told us, it was amazing that we didn't know them even ourselves as a committee. You know, it was our first time to know about them. The annual survey, a lot of very interesting things. In terms of transport, improving our transport technology. You know, we need to talk about these things. Okay, thank you. I think you can respond.
Yes, this is the difficult part. I'm going to ask the DDGs specifically to speak to the targets that were not achieved. I can speak at the highest level.
The last thing which I forgot. Sorry, DG. Recently, we had a very moving congress, the Astronautical Congress. I haven't heard much about the department on astronautics. In astronomy, I've heard a lot, but astronautics, I haven't heard much. And you see, I think about Israel with its project of Chapel Hawks and City Hawks and other things like that. I don't know how you are going to be looking at it after we've held this very big Congress for the first time in Africa. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Chair. So they will come to the details. I'm not an auditor, Honorable Smith, but the way the audit works is that the Auditor General makes findings on the basis of what they've audited. And after they've done that, they approach management with the findings. And management responds. And if they are satisfied with the response of the management, I think there is a mechanism for the auditors in which they assess, I think, the materiality of the issue, or they decide whether they are satisfied with the explanation that the management has provided. I've been told that auditors work with proof, and sometimes you may have done something. If the auditors cannot get a proof that you've done it, they will not be interested. So, in the case of the Sowetan, I suspect what happened is that the management report that was sent to management before management responded was leaked to the Sowetan. But I think perhaps the person who did that forgot to wait until management responded and find out from the Auditor General's office in the mechanism in which they then deal with the responses from the management how they have dealt with the matter. But as far as I know, as a DG, and I think my DDGs would agree with me, the department and the minister and the deputy minister, as far as I know, has not tried to influence the outcome of the AG in any way, and we can say this categorically. Now, on the issue of the fruitless expenditure and wasteful expenditure, there was the funding that related to two staff members, I think, that had attended an ALDP course, and they did not finish. The issue was that money was paid, they didn't finish. So what we've asked them to do is a simple matter. The course was divided into two parts. The first part is they attend the coursework, which they did, and the last part is for them to submit a project. So they've been asked, they received a red letter from the DG, to ask them to do the course and finish it off. So, yes, it appears as fruitless expenditure in the sense that there was no proof that they have a certificate of having completed the course, but that does not mean that the money was given to people who never attended the course. That's the first issue. The second one is the issue that relates to the secondment of staff from the SASPO office. Usually when people are seconded from one organization into the other in government, the procedure is that we should request the minister to write to the Minister of Finance and actually ask the approval of the people to be seconded. We didn't have proof that that was done. So the money, therefore, that was spent on those people traveling in the department to do SKA-related activities is therefore considered as wasteful expenditure because there isn't a letter that says the secondment process, and again, we've tried to clean that matter up. And then the last issue relates to the matter of using a service provider for which we didn't have a service level agreement. What happened was that the service provider has been providing services for moving mainly item between Cape Town and Pretoria offices, and most of the time the funding was less than 500,000, in which case we didn't have to go to tender. But what happened, I think 2 years ago, Dr. Afterhide, that we had an exhibition in Shanghai, and we used the same company. And I think we just here, again, human error, didn't remember that if we have to use the same company, there's a likely possibility that the cost of shipping these things to the Shanghai Expo, which we had, would be more than 500,000, and therefore we have to have a proper service level agreement. So I think that's the issue on that one. Again, it does not mean that the money went into somebody else's hand. We just didn't really pay attention to just ensuring that if the service in this particular year exceeds 500,000, we'd have to follow the proper procedure. On the staffing, yes, the vacancy rate is high. We monitor this now every month, where we monitor how we would like to bring this thing down. But in particular, the interviews for both the COO position and the acting TDG positions have now are in the process of being filled, and we've had interviews, so we're finalizing the process. So that should help us in making sure that the high-level positions in particular have been filled. I'm going to reserve the details of the targets that have not been filled to the various DDGs with your permission, Chair, can report at the highest level. But the fully-fledged and the nascent description of the NSI, we've had a huge discussion internally around this to say possibly every country has some form of an NSI. But in relation to what we think would be really a Bentley or a Mercedes-Benz version of the NSI, we're not there yet in terms of what we've set up. So things are working. But for instance, we're not so sure how well connected is our private sector to the work that is being done at the universities. Can we find a way to enhance that? How well, for instance, we have a full understanding of what it takes to take an output from the laboratory into the commercial domain. One of the things that we have now found out that in terms of our mandate, some of the work that we have done and the prototypes that we have developed, in order to have them at a full scale on the work that we are doing in titanium, in the jewel is one example in particular, you need billions of rand and to take that prototype into a full commercial scale. Do we really understand? Maybe as a DST, we think we know, but we have to convince others on how we should really have the funding that takes these things into the logical conclusion. And we think that conversation in the country and perhaps other instruments to stimulate innovation, therefore we really think that we still need to really pay attention, have the conversation that is adequate for us to really have a fully fledged NSI. Caprisa, my understanding is that we have provided some funding as a DST. What hasn't happened is that the expectation from the researchers, especially if you're going beyond phase two trial when you go into phase three, that's where you really have to work closely with the clinics and you work with patients. And therefore, the expectation perhaps is that the Department of Health should come onto the party. And we are having discussions. I think there's a bilateral with the DG coming up towards the end of November, to have a discussion around the partnership around both the medical research and the department in particular. To also, it's the same thing, you know, you've reached a certain stage as the Department of Science and Technology. Somebody needs to come in and take this thing into the logical conclusion. So I think that's the expectation, but I think we are managing this and we're trying to do our level best to. And then the last issue around the TIA concern on the investment framework and the blanket approval by Treasury, yes, we agree with you in principle that that would be the best approach. But at the same time, I in particular realize where perhaps Treasury is coming from. You're using public funds, you are investing in high-risk areas which may and may not succeed. And therefore, in my view, they are looking for two things. One is a well-thought investment framework, and secondly, the success stories. And one of the conversations that I think we had when we met with them is that out of the lessons that we have learned from the BRICS and the Innovation Fund, we think we have sufficient expertise and the lessons learned on how to manage this risk. But I think it's a case of convincing them, then they will be able to provide, I think, the blanket. But the second one is, are we able to attract other funders into the programs that we're doing? Because usually that's a sign that what you're asking people to invest in is credible and they can see value in this. And again, maybe at this point the situation is not ideal, but maybe we also need to go and do a little bit of homework and probably demonstrate with some tangible success stories with some co-investors, and hopefully we'll be able to get a breakthrough in the next. Honorable Shin, yes, we apologize that we haven't finalized the bioeconomy strategy. We now have a draft document which is going around. One, we've asked some critical readers to help us from the science community and the technology and innovation community. And the Deputy Minister is closely involved in this program. We should be able to have a document, well, you said 25th or thereabout of November. So by the end of November, we will have a document. And again, once we've internally interrogated, presented it to the Minister and the Deputy Minister, the document is ready. Antarctic research, yes, the staff that was driving that had to do a little bit more work on the astronomy work, but at this point in time, it does not mean that the work is not being done. I mean, we can give you a number of success stories on the bioeconomy and some work on the Antarctic research that we are doing, including taking the recommendations that has recently been done at the NRF around the work of the location of the Antarctic research and the need to combine the logistic work that is sitting at the Department of Environmental Affairs and to ourselves. And one of the delays were as a result of the reconfiguration of government. We found that when we wanted to discuss, you know, the elements of the strategy with the department, there were portions of the department that were busy worrying about the proper location fisheries, I think. But we will take this into account. In fact, the concept that we have started to look at is a concept called the Polar Institute to look at Antarctic research and the Southern Oceans research. So, yes, we apologize. We are not ready. But on the bioeconomy, as I say, hopefully at the end of December, we'll have a document that could be shared with the portfolio committee. The staff turnover, we do have a bit of a problem here. We've been trying to understand this phenomenon. I've said to the colleagues, especially the DDGs, where we really probably also have a sizable turnover, that either I'm a bad manager or I'm an excellent manager. I'm bad in the sense that people cannot tolerate working with me and they leave, or I'm so good that every time they work with me, they are seen to be doing so well that everybody poaches them. We haven't got a breakthrough on this, but nevertheless, just the simple statistics is that most of the DDGs that have left in the department have mostly gone to either be the CEO of the Bureau of Standards or one of the executives at the Nuclear Energy Corporation. But your second part of the question, why does it then take us so long to fill these positions when we have so many people? We find that you have a lot of people with qualifications, but we find that their ability to work in a policy environment has been a bit of a problem. And in fact, I think in the last couple of years, for some of the senior management, what we found is that we are beginning to get the fruits of growing our own timber. In fact, at the chief director level and some of the director level positions, we've subjected our internal candidates to the same competition as external candidates, but the internal candidates have consistently proven that. So I think over time, the investments that we have made on growing our own timber, such as this accelerated leadership development program and the emerging ones for the DDGs, will begin to help us to make sure that if we do lose people, either because we are bad managers or two good managers, at least we can fill these positions relatively quickly. On the Mkwena, the damages, do you want to come? Can I leave that to you? Because you provided me with a reasonable explanation on the damages around the, especially the car damages, in just the way that as in government we have organized this. The simple answer, but you can elaborate, is that government doesn't provide insurance. So when we hire cars, we don't take insurance from Europcar, Avis, and Hertz. But government doesn't provide the cover for all government because of some explanation that you would give. And therefore, when there's a damage, we then have to pay out of, because the feeling was that if government had to take insurance for the entire government, it would be too costly to service. But Ms. Mkwena knows this more than I do. I'm not so sure about the 67,000 from the presidency, where it comes from. Maybe the CFO can respond to that. The MCC Caprisa, maybe Val can speak to that, and then the dedicated finance expertise to the board of sons of the minister and ourselves are busy trying to help them to fill that position. Your point, Chair, the big one, of communication, we agree with you. This is something that we've picked up as being a big opportunity, but what we have started to do is to develop something which we call a Senior Communication Managers Forum, where we bring in the communicators from the Science Council and we sit in a forum. And one, we raise the issue and the challenge of communication, but we're also beginning to say, can we work together in having something which is called account executives? In other words, people who are probably located, they sit in communication, but they spend time with the scientists and the engineers, either at the unit at the CSIR or the NRF or any of the science councils, so that they will be looking at these things from the communication side of things. We've just learned this thing ourselves with somebody who joined the department, listened to the presentation of what we were doing in the department, and was pleasantly surprised that Department of Science and Technology is doing these things. So, there is a problem with us as science, people who have a science training, that we tend to spend a lot of time doing things and don't worry about communication, because the feeling is that we go to conferences and these types of fora where we communicate our results, but this is a slightly different communication. So we, for instance, identify the need to be looking at having a forum of even discussion around climate change issues and the role of science around this and what various departments are doing. So I think maybe what we'll do when we finalize this strategy of how we can get the science councils to work with us, maybe early next year, we'll be happy to be invited and share with you some of these.
You've just touched a point. Early this morning, I got a call from SIPC Free State saying that they want to understand this role of science in climate change, you see, and whether scientists can work with civil society in addressing this problem. You see, it's supposed to be going to someone there, this thing, then coming to me in Parliament, you see.
Thanks very much. And then I'll also leave Dr. Munsami to talk about if you are interested, it's up to you, on the things that we are doing in astronautics in general. The others, I thought you were mentioning them, coastal engineering, CSR and Logistics Survey, but there's some exciting work that we are doing as part of the rollout of this strategy, and we can share that quickly with you. Okay, so maybe let's go around the table with your permission, Chair, on the DDGs, on the areas where we've not identified, number one, and then number two, let's talk about this insurance issue, and maybe CFO can come in on the 67K from the president. No, 67. Yes, on the research chairs, I have a note here that says that, yes, the delays are because we are reporting on this financial year. But as you know, Honorable Shin, I think you asked the question, we actually have now agreed with the NRF to make a call to ramp them up from 82 to about 92. But what I didn't understand is what is meant by a virtual model on the wealth of expertise of these researchers. Are you suggesting how do we make sure that they are increasing the research capacity? I didn't get a clarity.
It was a discussion that we had last year that obviously a problem is in filling the post, that the research chair may have a partner who doesn't necessarily want to relocate, or there may be the successful incumbent may have a business enterprise that he does on the side that he doesn't want to leave, you know, back in Finland or wherever it is without him being there. So that with some sort of using technology and perhaps the occasional visit here, that they could do sort of, you know, conferences, virtual conferences and that sort of stuff, if that couldn't be an innovative way around the problem.
I think as a follow-up to Honorable Shin, what we mistook her as saying is also valid. It's valid also. I would like to know what is the criterion or the criteria that you use in identifying researchers. I'm coming from one conference where one research chair, well, I wouldn't say where, but where many people felt that he was not at the grasp with the issues. You see. So it's now the research chair is a person who is supposed to be guiding actually the society and the community that he or she works with. Now it shouldn't be the person who confuses the community. You know. So what are the criteria that you use? Because there were many things that were picked up in that conference, why there were those kinds of misgivings.
All right, we'll come back to this issue. I just want to consult with Betty on the matter. So who wants to start? Maybe we can just go around the table, Ms. Gwen and the other DDGs. Thanks.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think the DG covered the better part of the damages for the vehicle. What I could add is that it takes sometimes the amount sits here for over a financial period, maybe for more than one, because we cannot just write it off. We have to investigate who is responsible for the damage, whether it's the employee themselves, and then if they are found that to have been negligent, then we recover the money. If not, then we have to write it off in the process, depending on whether we have savings at the end of the financial year or not. So the issue around insurance is that because of the value of the assets in government, the insurance of those assets would be too costly as compared to having to manage the damages that may therefore occur. Thank you. If I may just maybe follow up. One of the cases in this instance is one accident where the value of the damage is more than 100,000. So it's not a big number of them happening. It's actually the value of pay incident that makes the amount higher.
Okay, the next one.
Yeah, thanks, Chair DG. I want to respond to the query about performance targets not achieved. In particular, there are 3 that is within the Program 5 domain. And that includes measures like the number of household beneficiaries, the number of jobs created, etc. If you see the explanatory note in the strategic plan, these are, those two particular are in fact strategic performance indicators that we need to rethink whether they're appropriate for Department of Science and Technology. As an example, we thought it was a simple case of saying number of new enterprise created or number of new jobs created. But in doing that, if you have to then give up on existing jobs that you have, then the net result is not positive. Also, it's not the department's role to be creating jobs or to delivering services to beneficiaries. Our role is to find new ways of doing things that influence other people in terms of their service delivery choices. So we're struggling with, and we're working with HSRC and the CSRs to identify a lot more appropriate indicators for a department like science and technology instead of a department whose responsibility it is to deliver, say, water services, etc. So those two particular targets are, in fact, quite a challenge in terms of measuring and the kind of negative incentives that it can create, for example, if you keep them. You can create new businesses, but you haven't made sure that the existing businesses you created are sustainable in terms of their value, etc. So that was the two of the performance indicators that we've made gains, and you can see in both instances the report that we've given is we've sustained the existing jobs. Some of these projects are long-term agro-processing initiatives, like essential oils, where you need a number of planting seasons to get the initiative up and running. It helps to keep those businesses sustained as a model. Once that model works, then you would be able to do it. And we are beginning to see some positive outcomes. For example, in aquaculture, it's now there's a national strategy around aquaculture, and the work that the DST did in aquaculture in the Honda Club Bay Area had informed the way in which the broader strategy is informed. For us, that's a much more powerful indicator of success than, say, for example, the number of specific jobs we created in that specific project. So we are struggling. We started modifying, and hopefully in our next strategic plan, we would try to have a lot more appropriate and measures that don't create unintended consequences. The second set of performance indicators, which were referenced as partially achieved, deal with a number of what we call our reports around the science and technology system, the innovation survey, the R&D survey, the tax incentive survey, etc. And in most instances, those were underway, but the performance target was written very strictly as we would issue that report in that financial year. So some of them have now already come to the portfolio committee and has been released. And again, we'll get a lot more tighter around the performance indicator, not list each of the report as a separate performance indicator, but talk about our information base that informs science and technology policy, because that's ultimately what we're about. We're not chasing individual reports. We're trying to build up a strong evidence base to allow us to make proper science and technology. So in some instances, the targets were about the non-achievements of a target are part of the challenge in defining suitable performance indicators, which we are grappling with, and hopefully we would get better at it. I'm not too sure there were any others that referred very specifically to Program 5 for now.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think mine is really in relation to the issue of the vacancy rate. We're currently sitting at 9.5. One of the challenges that we have, as DG has alluded earlier on, is that the progress that we make in terms of recruiting good staff is also impacted upon by the poaching exercise. Because if I took, for an example, bring you a list of people who have left the department, you have to disclose where they're going. A majority of them really have grown. So it's really a question that public service also recycle, you know, in a lot of good people. You know, so the other thing I just want to mention, that in relation to the fruitless expenditure, which we're really trying to manage, in the process, you know, one of the employees sadly passed away on Monday. So we just have to discuss in terms of how we're going to move forward on that. But the other one is still, we're still engaging in terms of how he completes the course. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. In the program dealing with international cooperation, we achieved all of our targets except for one, which was only partially achieved, the very last one that had to do with the number of IPSA initiatives, India, Brazil, South Africa initiatives that we were hoping we would be able to have managed last year. There were fewer initiatives that that came through in the year for reasons beyond our control. In one case, Brazil decided to withdraw or not participate in a particular initiative that had been anticipated, and because it's a trilateral, if one of the parties falls out, it doesn't take place. And the other initiative, which was a space initiative, it turned out that there was very poor communication between the Indian Department of Science and Technology and the Indian Department of Space. The Department of Science and Technology is our partner in the IPSA Science and Technology negotiations, but the department in India that's responsible for dealing with space and satellite issues is the Department of Space. And because they didn't close the loop properly, we couldn't deliver on this particular initiative either, so it was beyond our control. If I may, Chair and DG, there is one additional comment I would like to make in response to Honourable Shin's question about the chairs and the reference to virtual. I think you were really looking for, are there more flexible models that can be looked at? One thing I would like to report is that we have just reached in principle agreement with Switzerland, with the Swiss University Association, for the joint funding of two research chairs. We're calling them bilateral research chairs. Where these research chairs would spend part of their time in Switzerland and part of their time in South Africa. It will be jointly funded by the Swiss University Association and by the Department of Science and Technology. And the likely candidates could either come from Switzerland or from South Africa. The intention is for them to help deepen the bilateral relationship. The two areas in which they're going to be appointed are human and social sciences, specifically one chair in migration studies and another in diversity studies. So we are beginning to develop more flexible approaches in this regard, which also leverage third-party resources.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. I just want to address three issues that was raised. The first one is around one of the performance indicators, which is around companies established, and it comes back to the point that Imran was making. I don't want to belabor the point, but it relates to the appropriateness and relevance of some of these indicators. And if you look at the companies established as an indicator, if you look at what TIA is trying to do in terms of the innovation chasm, it's more along the lines of translating your R&D into tangible products and services rather than how many companies you've established, and that's not the DST mandate per se. So in terms of the companies that have been supported, there have been over 25. Roughly sitting at 30, the number of companies that are supported. So we just need to look very carefully at the indicator itself and how we articulate in terms of the function of DST. The second one is around the Medical Controls Council around CAPRISA. We have raised the issue at the official level, and we were essentially told that we shouldn't unduly influence the process. But given the importance of CAPRISA, what I've instructed the staff to do was to draft a letter at the executive level raising the issue rather than at the official level. So that's being done at the moment. And then the very last one is around the International Astronautic Congress and the presence of the department relating specifically to astronautics. Which, as you would know, we've been the platinum sponsor to the IAC, and so we've had a stand very strategically positioned at the IAC. But in line with that, we've had a week-long program, essentially two or three lectures per day, highlighting some of the initiatives that South Africa is undertaking. But what we've also been very wary about is in terms of the role and responsibilities between the department and the agency. And we didn't want to communicate initiatives on behalf of where the agency was involved, but rather stick to the kind of policy strategy interventions and let the agency talk around the actual implementation. So a lot of the communication has been through SANSA, But as I said, we've also had a week-long program highlighting some of these strategy policy kind of interventions. Thank you.
But I did need some gaps that I had identified before here. You remember?
Yes.
They were exactly obvious there in terms of the role of science and technology and trade and industry. Actually, a number of scientists, they talked to me about this. Why is it like this, the arrangement? And, you know, I didn't want to embarrass you. I said, no, we are working on it. There is already, I received a letter just even before the Congress, which was saying that I must arise because the Astronautical Federation is having its summit in Washington in May next year, in which case, because everywhere there, they felt that the role, and actually if you, I went to a number of sessions there, they were all about deep science, nothing more. But now talk about business. So I think we have to look into that. Right. Honorable Smith. Sorry. But the first one was Honorable Muchumi at the long race.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is just a follow up on the questions that were asked. The other one is with regard to the staff turnover. Dr. Mjoha said, I forgot what they haven't made any breakthrough. But what I would like to know is what strategy do they have in place to ensure that this gets kept, or they are just content that people leave the department? The other one is with regard to the cars that get written off. I would like to find out, because they do not, these cars are not insured, but who then declares or assesses a car and declares it a write-off? And after that car has been written off, how does it get disposed of? Thanks.
In that it doesn't come back to the person who damaged it, and then it gets it as a written-off thing. Hey, that's a very good question.
Chair, thanks. Yeah. Also, a follow-up. I understood of the targets. I mean, I also don't believe targets, you should be wedded to them if they're still in the process of being developed. So the ones on the business establishment and so on, I understand. I didn't understand the one there on the research chairs. I missed the answer. I mean, when I look at your report, your target was 102 cumulative, right? Then that was revised down to 20 for the financial year in question. That's what it says in the annual report. And the achievement was zero. Now, I don't understand the answer I got, so perhaps I wasn't listening perfectly. Could I crave your indulgence to get an explanation of that? Then the second one is the capricious story. Now, the MCC is one side of it. The complaints we had from the project leaders was that MCC are potentially a problem, so maybe that's being addressed through the route you mentioned. But the other issue was the issue of finance. Now, I don't quite understand what the response has been from the department. At the time that this thing was a completed results were announced, I think it was in April or something in that conference in Europe. That's now 18 months ago. When we saw them, and there was agreement at that conference internationally that the results are so significant that you need to fast track the bringing to market of the product. To fast track it, it meant you had to do your confirmatory study ASAP. 18 months later, there's no confirmatory study yet. Caprice 008 is awaiting funding. The American government, I mean USAID, said, here's the money. We money immediately. Within days of the conference, there was money from America. And they said, from South Africa, nothing. They mentioned a small sum from yourselves, actually. DST was credited with some small sum, but there was a figure. And the figure, colleagues, was 39 million over 3 years. They wanted 13 million per year for 3 years for the confirmatory study to get going immediately. And when we saw them, the answer was, that's not being made available. Now, the way I understand the DG, he's saying that we need to talk to health and maybe there's a process or maybe this, maybe that. I don't understand. We need greater sense of urgency and somebody needs to be driving this thing. We actually asked a question of the Deputy President of the House and he said he knows nothing about it, but he'll follow up. Well, I don't know if he has or not. But I really do think there should be greater focus on this to see whether it could be driven forward more thoroughly. Thank you.
Yeah, actually, I think Honorable Smith is right, because We saw a very high sketch of foreign countries wanting to take over, and because they were showing us there in their PowerPoint presentation, a lot of what has happened in the world, they are in Washington, everywhere in the papers, that is a breakthrough, but it's funded from there and not from our side. It was really a concern that why, at least here, we know governments are always reserved in funding a high risk to research, but this one was already promising because it was producing positive results, but yet there was very little support that they got from us. I remember in the evening the rector said that, well, we are not talking about us because that maybe funding must be upgraded for us, but we are saying generally, and here we've got work that is exactly conspicuous to all the people of the world. Why would the government not therefore come in? Because this is part of us. So I think that's very important. Honorable Shin.
If I can just butt in here, because I see the DG is looking very puzzled here, and I don't know if I can just perhaps tell my colleagues what I've been doing on this issue. I've been in close contact with the Kaprisa people, and I've also asked a couple of questions around the various ministers, and I did write to Minister Pandor asking if she was going to renew the funding, and this has also been confirmed by Kaprisa that, yes, they've got more funding from DST since we saw them than they actually expected. And in fact, they were expecting a 60-40 split between UNAIDS and DST, and apparently it's now a 50-50 split, and they have more money than they actually asked for. So that obviously hasn't been communicated. I'd also written to Minister Pandor asking her to please have a quiet cup of tea with the Minister of Health to get him to, elbow the MCC, and she said that really wasn't her bag, wasn't her responsibility. So obviously it's now been passed on to the officials to see if they can do something, which is great. I've also written to the Minister of Health, asking him to please move things along, and a month later I've not had a reply, which I think perhaps says something about where the bottleneck is.
Even now, also remember we were in a meeting of the deputy minister from Germany with the DDG on international cooperation, remember recently? And he had come also for a project of that nature. And he was to leave Cape Town to Durban to also meet with those people. And so you may find a situation where Germany now also funds them. And see, it's very important to go to monitor the progress there from our side, so that we know where things are going. Yeah. But again, what Honorable Shin is saying confirms my concern about communication. Look, we don't know, and that's why we ask these questions, you see.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to ask Mbuyiselo, the DDG Corporate Services, to talk about the return of cars, and then Thulani to talk about the interventions around the staff turnover in the department. I mean, the answer is what I said around building your own timber. There's no substitute for this. We have to develop our own people. The staff turnover will always happen. That's what we've come to accept it. It's a risk that we have to deal with as management. But when that happens, we need to find a way of making sure that when people leave, we have people that are competent enough in the department to be able to fill positions. The only unfortunate thing is that sometimes you train people as you build your own team, but if you don't have vacancies when they've grown, they still leave, and you still have the supply and demand that you can never manage. But suppose the more you train, the more likely that when that position comes, people will be fit. But maybe Thulani can add a bit more. On the Kaprisa, I can ask Val, but I also, my recollection is the same as Honorable Shin's, that maybe this was before we really looked at the funding, because I do think that we've provided sufficient funding from this department of the from our side, and really what they are asking for is that when you really go deep into clinical trials, the Department of Health needs to come to the party, and we are trying to engage with them and
get them, but Val probably knows the latest. If we can't give you the details there, Honorable Smith, we're happy to put it in writing and submit to the committee through the chair. So Thulani first, maybe, and then Nombuyiselo, and then we'll come back to the research chairs. But you has just given me a full detail, Honorable Smith, around the numbers that you talked about. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think we do not have the alarming, really, staff turnover. As I said, that our current vacancy rate is 9.5%. But obviously, there's been quite a fluid executive in the last 5 years or so. But I think we are in the process of analyzing some of this position. In terms of managing it moving forward, we have obvious a number of interventions. One of them is to create career pathing, for junior staff in particular. And then some of the senior managers have been appointed to mentor junior staff members in different areas. So I think that's really, and where we have vacancies, we try our level best to ensure that if there are appointable individuals in the department, we do consider them for growth purposes. We do not overlook potential. But obviously, I think that, so those are some of the mechanisms that we have put in place. As the DG has indicated, sometimes it's difficult to retain people when they've outgrown the organization. But one of the things that we're also doing is we have obviously a very quarterly report on the exit interviews that we conduct with our staff members, just to have a sense in terms of where are the challenges in the organization. And I think there's been a number of areas that we identified in those exit interviews. So we also try and ensure that we intervene. One of them, like issue that was highlighted even here, was issues of communication, the feedback that they normally do not get in terms of the work that they normally do. So there's various areas. I mean, issues of leadership have also come up. Hence, we had developed that program on accelerated leadership development program, which was targeted at SMS members to ensure that part of the skills that they have, is to ensure that they're able to lead teams and manage, as I said, converting scientists into bureaucrats. Bureaucracy is one of the biggest challenges, so I think we've been able to succeed in some of those areas. So I think it's an ongoing process that really cannot reach a particular end point. It's more a living exercise, so which we'll continue to conduct and monitor. So every quarter, as I said, I do submit a report to EXCO in terms of vacancy rate, the issues that are coming up from those interviews, and the interventions that we make in terms of mentoring junior staff members. Thank you.
Right. There's one question I think that hasn't been answered, isn't it, Honorable? Yeah. But before that question, I just want to respond to what His Excellency has just tried to explain. You see, I've been in this committee since its establishment. You know, we have had the problem of these vacancies. There have been many reasons that have come from various DGs who have been there. One of these presentations in annual reports, when we queried the DG of that time, I wouldn't say who, said, you see, under the auspices of this new Labor Relations Act, it's a nightmare to bring a person next to you whom you don't trust because you cannot get rid of him when you now need to. So I do not know if you know that. I know it because I've been here for a long time. So he told us straight that it was a nightmare to bring a person next to you whom you cannot get rid of once this time comes. So therefore, it's not, so you must also include the human factor among other challenges. You see, don't beat about the bush because we know it here. Right, let's allow the member.
I'm a little bit worried. If the department says there's nothing they can do, I become very worried, actually, not a little bit worried, because Dr. Mjoha indicated that they do train. So I'm asking myself that they train people and they don't put any measures to say, you are not going to leave. They can train these people. These people complete whatever that she would be trained on or that would be trained, he would be trained on. And the following day, that person decides to leave because there are no measures and there's nothing that can be done. And I'm quite, it's for the first time that I hear that an institution cannot have a retention mechanism or strategy. It's for the first time, really, that I hear that. Yes, people have the right to move. But especially where you train them, you have to have a mechanism to ensure that these people do not get trained today and tomorrow they do not they leave the institution. That's why I ask that, is the department content with the fact that they are pouring this water into a bottomless bucket? Thanks.
You need, from our experience, even that what you're talking about, we have done an exercise from here. There was a time when there was a meeting of higher education establishment, I think, what is it, higher education institutions, whatever, with HSRC, with the departments, with government. I think the president was, which was still Honorable Mbeki at that time. And so, they came to the committee, HSRC, the CEO said, I have now been tasked from, I'm coming from that this meeting, there is a problem of unused human capital. So let's identify, give me all the CV that you have in the committee, and we will then find them, and then we'll deploy them according to where there are many vacancies. And we see that we got some of the best CVs, PhDs. You know, only one got work. And then it came back to the DG saying that you can't bring someone you don't trust. Only one, actually, these were in a variety. I'm talking about top people who came, some of them with PhDs from Michigan University that worked in top laboratories in the United States. But they didn't find, actually, one of them was a lady who he was one of the best 10 in cancer research in the U.S. They didn't find work. So at the end, I said to the HSRC CEO, so what do you say? She said, I have given up. I don't think that. I now know it's not the problem that we think it was. So, well, but at least we're able to put one or two. It's fine. But there was none. So I don't like that debate to come back because the reality is human factor. It's not about all what we talk about. It's, you know, yeah. So you can expand as you like, but I don't think you'll repeat this one.
Madam Chair, I think we will bring to this committee our we do have a retention strategy. The issues I was just highlighting are the common trends that happen in the labor market. Also, I think in the public service, one of the challenges is that, as I said earlier on, you know, most of the people really move from government department to government department. So being one single public service and, you know, creating those restrictions, it's quite difficult. But I think what we'll do is we'll, in one of the sessions, just bring a full retention strategy so that it can be deliberated with the committee to indicate what are the measures we put in place to ensure that we do not have a huge, what we call, a staff turnover. But just also to emphasize that at the level of senior management, as the DG said earlier on, we had three vacancies. Two of them will be filled by this month, and then we'll be left with one which we've already shortlisted, and we're just trying to secure a date with the panel to ensure that by the end of December, the what we call the DDG for Program 4 would have started. So really, those are the mechanisms that we've put in place in relation to excellence in our management. But I think we do have a detailed extension strategy, which I think we're more than happy to present it to this committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. The process with the disposal, it's twofold. There's assets that are not owned by government, like hired vehicles.
the process would be there will be an assessor on the scene who determines what happened, and through their own insurance processes or disposal processes, they have an assessor and bill us. When we get billed, we get our own independent assessor to confirm the figure. Then we pay the amount, and then we sit with the amount that therefore we need to write off. But before we write it off, we need to prove that the person who was driving was not negligent. If the person was negligent, then you recover the money from the person. But if the person wasn't negligent, then it becomes the expense for the organization, for government. In the process where it's a government-owned vehicle, the same process where we'll have an independent assessor who will assess the value of the damage, and then we have a committee within the organization which deals with disposal of all assets, including vehicles and other type of assets. The committee, first assess the items, agree on whether they need to be disposed or not, and then make a recommendation. And the disposal process, therefore, becomes an open auction process where people bid. We get a professional auctioneer to assist us in doing that, and then people bid, and those who qualify get the assets at the value that would be recommended by the auctioneer.
Thanks, Chair. One question, Honourable Smith, around the researchers. At the time when we approached Treasury for additional funding for research chairs, we had already budgeted, or we had money on the kitty to add 20 additional chairs. And then we got the money for the other 40 chairs, which then has created a pool of 40 new plus 20 that were earmarked for a rollout according to the target here. And then what happened was that instead of rolling out the first 20 for the efficiency of the process in terms of asking the NRF to issue a call, the 20 that were earmarked for rollout were then added onto the 40 so that the call, because the process of administering, you know, the call, the adjudication is quite laborious. We then included those 20 calls in the call that is currently out now. So rather than a 20 additional to the 92, we're now adding 60 to the 92, so we'll have 153. So it's the target is still there. It's just taken longer to implement because it's now been included in the new research chairs.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, honorable members, we have this last lot here to finish off. I was thinking, I was of the opinion myself that we can have a small short break, so 15 minutes, so that we just finish off and then we are free for the afternoon. It's a small where they are supposed to give a report on the research and development tech. Can have a, I'm sure there must be some lunch and tea here, and then we can have a business lunch and continue so that we finish off. I'm going to another meeting in Durban now this afternoon. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Right. So let's break off for 15 minutes and have some drinks there, whatever we have. I don't know what they have outside. And then we can convene after 15 minutes and continue so that we just wind up the day's program today.